Welcome back, friends. We're talking about Robert Francis Provost, who is now Pope Leo the 14th. We set up a little bit, just his background, his family, his beautiful family. It was a tribute to his mother. So now let's look a little bit closer now at his education and dissertation. So before Robert Francis Provost became Pope Leo XIV, his mind was already deeply immersed in questions of authority, obedience, and how religious life should be structured in service to truth. His education and the doctoral work he completed offered early hints of what his pontificate might hold. After finishing his undergraduate studies, a BS in mathematics at Villanova in 1977, Prevost entered the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago for his theological formation. The Augustinian order then sent him to Rome in his late 20s to study canon law at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas, also known as the Angelicum. He professed solemn vows in the Order of St. Augustine in 1981, and during those years, his studies combined academic rigor with the lived experience of religious commitment. He earned the licentiate in canon law in 1984, and soon after, he embarked on a more ambitious path. A doctoral dissertation defended in 1987, titled The Office and Authority of the Local Prior in the Order of St. Augustine. The dissertation, and I have a link to that, the dissertation explored a vital question: how does one lead as a superior within a religious community so that authority is not overbearing, but faithful, service-oriented, rooted in the rule, respectful of conscience, and attentive to both individual and communal flourishing? In his doctoral work, Prevost juxtaposed older traditions of authority, including juridical norms from Augustine's own writings, with the post-Vatican II legal context and the newly promulgated 1983 Code of Canon Law. He asked, what is the role of the local prior, the superior who lives and leads among the brothers? How should that role balance hierarchy and obedience with listening, co-responsibility, and the common good? One of the striking themes is the way Prevost emphasizes that authority must originate from above, the church, Christ, and the rule, but be exercised from within with humility, consultation, and love of souls. He does not treat canonical power as detached or purely juridical.
I think you're trying to say juridical.
Juridical, and I thank you for that. Apologies, one and all. Juridical. Rather, he places the liturgy, common prayer, spiritual guidance, and formation of conscience at the heart of how authority is made real. The dissertation argues that the superior's office includes teaching, docendi, sanctifying, sanctificandi, and governing, regendi. This echoes Augustine's understanding of Christian community and the threefold office of Christ.
Could you repeat them
Another,
again one at a time?
sure, teaching, sanctifying, and governing. Another important thread is how obedience is conceptualized. For Prevost, obedience is not blind submission, but a moral and spiritual discipline where the will consents freely through understanding, where conscience is to be respected, and where accountability and mutual respect prevail. Even as a young canonist, he showed concern about abuses of power, misuse of authority, and how leadership that fails to respect a community's dignity will fracture the unity it is meant to preserve. Because his dissertation was written in the early 1980s, just after the 1983 Code of Canon Law, and not long after Vatican II, it engages the tension of reform, how to maintain tradition and order while being responsive to the spirit, to transformation and to growth. The work is scholarly and precise, yet deeply pastoral. It imagines what religious life looks like lived out in concrete communities with real people, brothers, novices, priests, soul care, formation, conflict, and loyalty. As listeners, one might reflect, this is not simply a legal treatise. It reveals Provost's sense of leadership, his hope for a church where structure and love exist together, where authority is service, and where obedience is freedom and truth. And I have that underlined in my notes. So, and in some of my notes, I hope it comes out, it's in red to kind of pull it out a little better. These are the qualities that would later mark the early days of his pontificate, even when the task seemed gigantic. And that's true. That's why we got to go there, because we're already seeing this tension between tradition and service lived out.
There is most assuredly a tension. I think what the thing that you were saying there, the three offices, right? Teaching, sanctifying,
Sanctifying and governing.
right? You were saying that those he but he puts those underneath. What is the lens that you said that he's sort of reading those under now, the new Code of Canon Law?
Yeah, so there's going to be the new Code of Canon Law that came out in 83. We have, of course, Vatican II and its aftermath still rolling along. Of course, we have the Theological Union at no where he came from. Yes, the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. I'm fond of mathematics. I keep thinking his degree in math might be a saving grace with some of this other thing. But that's just a preference on my part. That's just a preference. But you know who else is a mathematician first was Jacques Philippe,
Yes,
Father
sir.
Jacques Philippe.
Yes.
So
Yeah, there's some there's I
yeah.
mean it's I one hesitates to make any real assessment. I know that one of the things that has generally been recommended to most pastors, right, when they take over a pastorship, particularly of one that had been filled of long duration, shall we say, right, is to let the dust settle for a year, right? So I am hesitant to make any real long-term opinions about anything that Leo is going to become based upon the argument from silence, right? Since he hasn't done something, one should not really use that as the point of criticism. Because there is an element, particularly in these forms here, right? Teaching, sanctifying, governing. There is an element where I do believe that in some way, and I find it, and I say this as one who is sometimes frustrated by the language that is being spoken of as being Leo's words. I don't really know whether or not they are effectively his words or not, meaning like things that will come out from his website, like on Twitter or anything like that, right? But I think that there has to be a real patience to permit him to grow in his teaching office. I would say that in terms of like the sanctifying and the teaching office, some of the first initial actions that he has made to those two elements of this doctoral thesis have been to begin a very slow instruction of the faithful in our original prayers in Latin. Right? He's taken some time from his teaching office, right, to teach people about the Our Father, a small catechesis in the prayers of Latin. He did just permit a pontifical high mass to be celebrated in St. Peter's Basilica, which is a great mercy. And yet we have to juxtapose those two elements of his teaching authority with what other bishops are doing, but not in his name, right? They are doing these shutting down of masses, which I think is pertinent to both you and I, in regards to this conversation, in the name of Leo, I mean, in the name of Pope Francis, right? And a document that was written by him. And because, I think the hardest element of that is that these things are being done in America that we sort of feel should be by birthright, something, a place very, very close to Pope Leo's heart. Right, having been that he had all of his formative years here, and it's very hard once the we've used this analogy before. Once you cut the fabric of the down pillow, it's very, very hard to regather all of the feathers that have been lost and scattered. And so I think that that's where our concern comes from. I think that both you and I are generally very patient and we're willing to read things in the best possible way that they can be read. But it's going to be very, very hard once these sheep are scattered to regather them back to, in their entirety, to the flock from which they were scattered.
Indeed. Let us pick up in the next episode. We're going to take a look at what he would consider a religious order as the ideal, and that'll kind of give us a good understanding of what he sees the church writ large as an ideal. All right, my friends. Till then, fides, everyone.